Hey, everybody. Welcome to Pyro Toasty Talks. We're going to be chatting today about all things pyrography, art, and running a small business as an artist. This is Pyro Toasty Talks. With us today, as usual, we have David and Renee from It's David and Renee, as well as Zona and myself, Brian, from BZ Furfur. This is episode number 3, and today we're going to be talking about the things that we love about pyrography. So, I don't have a heck of a lot to say since I don't actually do pyrography. So, my favorite thing about pyrography is sitting right next to me, and I'm going to let her talk about her favorite things about pyrography.
I like how you say that you don't have much to say, but when I'm burning, you have much to say about ideas. When we were out, he was sitting there doodling and coming up with ideas for a series, an upcoming series. So you may not do the actual burning per se, but you have a lot to say about pyrography.
So Zona likes cats and she likes mandalas. So I drew a bunch of cats in like the form of a mandala, and I said it was a cat dala.
I love
and
it.
That's going to be a thing. And then we're also going to do mandoglas.
Okay.
And then I said we're going to also do hedgehogs, which we're going to be
Hogdollars. Wait. And then you said birds. What was the birds?
The birds, I think, were, I don't remember.
Birdollars?
My notes. I think they were like tweet dollars or something. Like
yeah, I think it was tweet dollars or something like that. Mind you, this is Turkish coffee at like 10 o'clock at night. Mm. And this is him doodling. He's like, can you make a stamp? A cat stamp? And I'm like, yeah, I can. I have to learn that lesson in my little course thingy, but I can. He's like, can we buy it? I was like, I'd rather make it, but you got to give me a second to learn it.
Yeah. I look forward to those. That looks fun. Yeah,
it's very entertaining because he comes up with these little doodles, and I love his doodles. One of the greatest things is that he will sometimes come up to me throughout a day and just drop off a random post-it note of doodles.
Mm-hmm.
And I've made his doodles into burns. And it's very entertaining. And he likes to say he has no artistic flair and he doesn't know anything. And I'm like, that's such a lie. You don't do the burn, but you have your ideas and you're very much part
ideas.
Of this.
David has ideas too. Yeah.
I will post some pictures from that in the Discord channel. So just a little, you know, plug for the Discord channel. We do have a Discord channel, which hopefully people we're starting to see people join and starting to see people discuss the podcasts. But it's actually been a really good way to kind of connect with people listening to the podcast, answer some of the questions that they have, and offer a platform for them to make suggestions about topics to cover in the future. So wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
And I'm pretty sure it's just called Pyro Toasty Talks on there too, right?
It is, but I think there's a QR code that we put up on the on Instagram. Okay. So people could just go that way.
Cool.
It's also in the show notes.
Okay.
And on the website.
There's the things.
There are ways.
There are things.
Alrighty. Well, let's dive into our favorite stuff. Let's do materials first. Like wood, burner, nibs, color media. Okay, so Zona, what is your favorite wood? Let's start with wood.
I do love the clear poplar. I love burning on the poplar. It's a nice soft wood and it's easy to burn on. It's I don't have to put much oomph into it. Like I don't have to press very super hard with the burner and I don't have to turn it up super crazy high to be able to burn into it. I seem to like the softer woods.
Mm-hmm.
I do like the hard maple for exactly the opposite reason, because it is a little bit harder, and it's just, I think once I get the burn down and I've sanded it down, that it's a really crisp line, and I love those crisp lines.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think those are my favorite wood. What about you? What's your favorite wood?
So I think the true wood love of my life is cherry. I love cherry wood. It gives such a good burn. At least for the way I use cherry wood, I know everyone has their own opinion, so some people might disagree with me, but I love cherry. I love the burn. I love how crisp it can be. But I think my second close runner-up is also the clear poplar. We make the rainbow poplar surfaces as well. And, like, I like the rainbow poplar, but it's just not quite the same. It's about the same to burn, but it smells different because it has different mineral deposits in the wood compared to the clear, which doesn't have any irregularities. So it smells different, but also, like, the color of the rainbow, whatever colors you're getting in your canvas, those can interfere with your art in a good way or a bad way. And sometimes I just don't want that. Sometimes I want just a clear, like, blank panel, a blank canvas. And I don't want to have to work around the color of the wood. So I do really like just normal, beautiful poplar. But cherry, I think, is still at number one. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. I love cherry. And being a wood person, I have favorite things that I like about each and every wood. But when I have to, like, pick just one wood that I like the most, that one's harder. But yeah, I stick with cherry.
I like the clearness of the clear poplar. I like the almost whiteness of it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I like that for, like, shading, because you can do, obviously, like, you burn on clearer, whiter wood, it's easier to do shadings, and you don't have to work around, like you said, you don't have to work around, like, the rainbows and the rainbow poplar.
Right.
Right? Or other things that are in the poplar. David's making faces, which is why I'm laughing.
Sorry, we have to share the microphone. Zona, have you tried the Hollywood every no. so often? Wait.
I feel like the answer is yes. I think
we had free Hollywood samples in the Timberdoodle one time. I don't know if you claimed one.
I'm pretty sure you might have. I did, and I'm trying to remember.
Well, it's very, I had just asked because it's very white as well, but it doesn't have, like, poplar has those kind of almost purple, I think it's actually the winter growth sections of the poplar. Mm-hmm. But the grain patterns are very, like, pronounced on it, whereas holly mm-hmm. tends to just be a very consistent white, almost like basswood when I've seen it. But it's a little bit harder than the poplar, so it's not as stringy. Mm-hmm. We don't have it very often because nobody grows big holly trees. But there's a couple in our neighborhood that if they die, I'm just gonna, like, they're gonna disappear in the middle of the night.
This is true. When we've, like, gone around walking the dogs, we know where the good holly trees are, and we're like, if they ever have landscaping done, we're gonna knock on their door and ask for that tree, because, like, that's gold right there.
I feel like I have, and I'm trying to remember what I put on it, but I feel like I did. I think you guys sent me, like, a little, is that what I wrote nib crib on? That might have been what I wrote the nib crib on.
Hmm. Yeah, holly's a good one. I haven't really used it. I mean, I had the sample when David brought home the samples, but we never made any, like, big pieces out of it or anything, so I didn't ever really use it for a project.
They're drying. Where is...
Yeah, we have more that are cut. They're drying. They're from logs that we got from a friend in D.C.
Where is holly generally native to?
It's native here.
Yeah.
I don't know how far west it is native, though.
It's a big family, and it's native kind of kind of all over the place, but the one that a lot of people think of is actually a Japanese holly. And then there's the American hollies as well. But yeah, they're pretty much all over the place, and they all have pretty similar characteristics as far as the wood goes, as far as I know. Not that I have had the chance to work with a ton of them.
It's hard to come by. Fun fact about holly, David, you probably know this, about the leaves. Yeah, the pointy leaves. Okay, so holly trees, deer love holly trees. And the holly will switch genes to make the leaves that are at the deer level pointy to deter the deer from eating it. Whereas, like, the leaves on top of the holly tree will remain smooth. It, like, swaps genes when it regenerates new growth, new leaves. Yeah.
Is holly poisonous?
That's a great question.
I don't think it will kill you, but I do not suggest eating the berries. I don't think, yeah. Like, I don't think it'll kill you dead, but I think it'll make your stomach upset.
It'll give you the Urkel gurgles.
Yeah. Now, listen, I'm already in the hospital for
do
that.
Do you have a favorite exotic wood?
No. So.
We don't really work
with them. We don't really use them. Like, they're so pretty to look at. And when we go into wood shops or we go to Chadwick's, you know, Chadwick orders a lot of exotics. And so they're pretty and they're there and I look at them, but we just will not buy them. Like, we know where they come from. We know the industry around them. And it's like, nope, it's so pretty, but no. But I think just color-wise, just looking at them, I think I would really love the purple heartwood. I think it would...
Purple Heart's the one that Renee most often asks me to break the rule and buy.
I know. It's the pretty purpley maroon one. And I feel like it would look so good with like a really bold burn and like white or silver paint, kind of like walnut because it's so dark. Mm-hmm. And once you would put like a finish or a sealer over it, I feel like the purple wood with like a big bright white magnolia flower or a big white lily or something would just like pop. But
no exotics. I can see that, but I just wonder if like this, the outline on Purple Heart would like blend into the wood itself, you know? So like, yeah. Even if you painted it, it would look like a painting rather than a burning.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the only thing. It's like I have like little pieces of Red Heart. Nothing that I haven't figured out what I'm going to do with it yet in terms of a project, but I've thought about that.
Yeah.
And I've worried about that.
Well, isn't the Purple Heart, like, because it's so dark, the burn wouldn't show up well on it, or is there a way to get around that?
I think it depends on how you would do your burn. If you're burning really light and superficial or very light shading, I think it's going to get lost really fast, really easily. But I think if you do like a big, deep, dark burn, or you make really thick, like a thick outline.
What do you do with walnut?
Yeah. Like when I do walnut stuff, I make it really dark. So I would just do the same kind of technique with Purple Heart, but I don't have any to try. Womp womp.
Do you have a favorite exotic wood, Zona?
Ooh. Favorite exotic.
You liked the Filipino mahogany.
I did like the Filipino mahogany. I liked the end result of it after it was burned and it was sanded down and then painted and then sealed. I liked the finished product of the Filipino mahogany. I was not a fan of actually doing the burning part of it.
Oh, why?
I personally felt like not sappy, but just like, I guess it would be sap. I'm not entirely sure what it is, but it's like I was burning through it and it would be like, just because of the way that the wood, the grain, I guess it had like little tiny pops of sap, for lack of a better term.
Interesting.
Like, I don't know what the actual technical term of it is. And I just found like it gunked up my burner pretty quickly throughout the burn. So as I was doing the burn, it was not the best.
Was it like sticky almost?
A little bit of sticky, just a little bit of, it just got gunky. Yeah. It just left the residue on my burner.
Was it extra smoky?
I wouldn't say it was extra smoky, but it was definitely smokier than I would prefer.
Okay.
But yeah, once the burn was done and then I sanded it down, like Brian, I remember I did the first set and he looked at it before I had sanded it down and he was just kind of like, oh, cool,
Brian.
And then I know it's just like, wait, I'm not done. And then like I sanded it down because that was the intention. I was going to sand it down and then I would paint only certain spots. So after I sanded it down and he goes, oh, that looks so much better. And I was like, well, that was the intention, was to sand down the overburn.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of the first times that she overburned a piece. And I don't know if that's a term that she made up or if
it's a term.
No, that's a term.
Okay. It was one of the first times that she overburned a piece. So it looked like the lines were really thick and...
like fuzzy.
Yeah, very fuzzy. And I was... I didn't know that after sanding it down that it would clean it up. So when I looked at it, I was just like, oh, okay.
You're like, that was a choice, honey.
It's one way to go about it.
Yeah.
I like the look of the spalted woods.
Okay.
Where it has a lot of imperfections in it.
Yeah, you like the spalted maple.
Why are you laughing, David?
Okay, so I know people love spalted wood, but I like don't like it. But I know people like it, so I work with it occasionally, and I've never met somebody who has just been like, oh yeah, I really love the spalted wood. So now I've like... It's you. You're the reason I have to work with this garbage wood.
You're welcome. I like the imperfections. I like the fact that it's very
He likes the streaks. He like the streakier, like the more obvious the streaks. Like we've looked at pieces of wood and I'd be like, "Oh, hey babe, look, it's spalted." And he's like, "It's not spalted enough. It's not pretty enough. It's clear." And I'm like, "No, it's thick." Like he's like, "No, no, no, no."
Like
he's
the like, chaos. "Yeah, more."
Yeah,
the so chaos.
He'll choose a piece, and I'm like, "Okay."
You would like the spalted poplar that no one has bought from us.
They bought two. Well, poplars, yes. Remember?
Okay, that's good. Was Brian the one who convinced you to buy it?
No, I had had my eye on it, okay. But I was waiting to have a little bit of extra money. And then it worked out when that you also had the clear poplar, and I was just like, oh, okay.
just since we're talking about wood, we were at a market the other day, and I was talking to one of the customers, and she was asking a lot of questions about the wood, and I was talking clearly out of my ass because I don't know much about wood. And Zona came over, and she's like, "I'll take it from here." She goes, "It's always so cute when you talk about wood."
I was He's like, trying his with best. My head
down.
I tease him a lot, but you know he listens to our conversations, right? He listens to when me and you talk. He listens when the three of us talk, and then he'll ask me questions, and he listens. So, he picks up stuff, and he'll ask questions and get an idea. So, he's not ignorant about the wood. It's just sometimes it's kind of funny when I'm like, "Oh, honey."
I am ignorant about the wood.
Oh, you're not as ignorant about the wood.
You probably know more than you think you do.
Yes, for sure he does.
So, tell me more about your favorite burners to use on your favorite woods.
I personally love the wire tip. I know I started with the dun dun dun. I started with the one that everybody starts with, the Versatile. And I had gotten mine like 20 something odd years ago on a whim because I was like, oh, wood burning, I'll get one of these little tools and try it out. And then like I think I used it once and then never used it again after that, but I never threw it out because I always kept telling myself, I'm gonna go back to it. And then when I made the change and decided to start the business, and it was just like, well, what the hell am I gonna do? I was like, I could do crochet, but the problem is that with the crochet and the tatting, the prices that I would have to charge, no one's going to buy it. And like, that's just the honest truth, right? And so I saw a book on wood burning. And so I was just kind of like, we're going to do that. And then I tried the Versatool, and I used the Versatool for a while. And then I got frustrated with the fact that you couldn't, there was no temperature control. Like, mm-hmm. I couldn't get it hot enough. Mm-hmm. I couldn't get the lines fine enough, especially for the things that I was trying to burn. It was just like these big clunky lines that were just driving me up a wall. So then I bought a machine off of Amazon, and I have no idea what brand it was. It was some off brand, and it was a wire dip, and that was great, and I used that, and then I melted it.
You did?
Yeah, I melted it. I melted the pen, and I'm looking at the pen going, I'm relatively sure it's not supposed to be melty tipped. I don't think that's supposed to do that. And I was just like, should I keep it or should I not? I'm like, you know what? I'm ridiculous. Like, I could just literally electrify myself, right? So then it came to, well, what am I going to use? So then I started researching, like, the big brands. Because I was like, you know what? If I'm going to start this, I'm going to get a good machine. I'm going to get a good brand, you know, something that'll last me a while and whatever and whatnot. And I landed on the razor tip. And I was just like, the skies opened up for me. And I was just like, what? What have I been doing all this time?
Yeah.
And then I found out that they had interchangeable tips.
Oh, yeah,
I could get all these nibs. And I was just like, oh. So it was really great for me to be able to play around with the different tips and just try things and just learn how to use the different tips and what lines they make and how to use them. And so at the end of it, I know the razor tip is my favorite. Yeah, I do have a Colewood, but I find it, I mean, I like how it gets hotter. I don't know if I want to say faster. I feel like I can like put it at a lower number and it gets hotter. But I don't like the way the wire is. I feel like the wire is just way too stiff and I have to like hold my hand funny and it's just like cumbersome and it just aggravates me. But then I found out that I could change out the wire and I still just have not done that yet either. Yeah.
When we were shopping, we really liked, we'd started with a Colewood and they have a higher maximum temperature than a lot of the other devices, which is why you can get hotter at a lower a lower number. You'll burn a little hotter because the 10 is wicked hot. Mm-hmm. But they, like, the materials aren't as nice. So, like, what you're saying with, like, the wire gets in the way. And then also Renee was, like, because it gets so hot, Renee was, like, burning her hands on it because the pen wasn't built to handle being that hot all the time.
I have things to say about Colewood, but I think I'll save that for the episode where we do our least favorite things.
Okay. Would you want to talk about your favorite burner?
Yes,
sure.
What is
your? Okay, so my favorite... My most used is the Optima from PJL Enterprises. I love my Optima burner. It's fantastic. It's what we've bought to sell on our own website because, you know, I've gotten so used to it and I've grown really fond of it and I have my favorite nibs. I know how to use it really well. So like we have bought and put together wood burning kits on our website and that's what we sell and that's what I promote. But if I had to pick my favorite combination, it would be the Colewood Cub wood burner with the PJL Optima pens. That is the combination. It's so good. So my Colewood Cub, I don't care for the Colewood nibs. Like, we can talk about that in another episode. I don't like their pens. I don't like their nibs. But I love the Optima ones. And they're insulated in a different way. They're made out of a different kind of, like, plastic. It's not plastic, but it is. It's different. It's sturdier. And I love the pens. but the Coalwood Cub does get hotter than the Optima burner. Not by a ton, I don't think, but enough to where I can go faster with my stippling. I can go faster with some of my big, deep, dark, bold burns. I can just turn it up to a 10 and it'll catch on fire when I touch down on the wood. PJL's Optima will get pretty dang hot. I mean, it'll make you bleed. It'll burn your skin. It'll get red hot. But I think the Coalwood gets a little bit hotter, and I think that the medium temperatures are, I feel like on the Coalwood, there's a significant difference between like a 4, a 4.5, a 5, a 5.5, and a 6. Whereas on the Optima, those middle temperatures kind of are the same. Like there's not a lot of difference between burning at a 5, burning at a 6, or burning at a 7. At least that is kind of what I've noticed with the woods that we use, with the nibs that I like. That's just kind of what I've noticed. But overall, definitely the Optima is my most used, my number one go-to.
Well, those pens are, they can be used. Like some of them can be used like with converters on different machines, correct?
Oh, yeah. So the hardware for both of these burners is the same. So the PJL Enterprises has like, I don't know what they're called. It has the male thingy and the cord has like the female receptor.
The fittings to connect the pen to the transformer unit is the same.
They're the same.
I do want to interject here real briefly because I handle the legal affairs for our business that we do not, as a business, recommend using a PJL nib inside of a Coalwood transformer. Just because. Because I think it'll void your PJL warranty.
It might void your PJL warranty. I'm not sure. I mean, obviously, if you're going to like stick with the brand, you know, just stick with the brand. But
I'm just covering our butt.
I'm just saying.
Use at your own discretion.
Yeah, use at your own discretion. But I don't know. I really like it. And you don't have to have any kind of like different hardware fittings or anything. It just plugs right into the same cord, same everything. So it's pretty nice.
I forgot what website I was on and I was looking for, I think I was looking at Coalwoods. I was just kind of doing some random research on it. And I forgot what website and it had offered the converters to use this pen with that converter. I thought that was really interesting. That was the first time that I realized that like sometimes they can be interchanged.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I'm going to do that.
But with like right to repair laws and stuff like that, there's a lot of restrictions on like what you can do with modifying your tools and, you know, still standing, being in good standings with your warranties. So I get that.
I just know PJL builds their tools out of higher quality like materials. Like the fittings all work the same, so you can swap them out, but like he uses thicker metal, he uses better plastic. Like it's, so he would, like you put it on a Coalwood and sure it gets hotter, but it might shorten the lifespan of your pen if that's what you're doing all the time.
So that's a good thing to think about.
Do you use, for your nibs, do you use interchangeable nibs or do you use the ones that are hardwired to the pen?
I use the hardwired ones, the fixed tip. When I first started wood burning, I had the Coalwood Cub with the Coalwood nibs, and Coalwood has two different options. They have the fixed tip pens, but then they also have the interchangeable ones, and the interchangeables are a lot cheaper, so that's what I kind of started with. I bought a whole bunch of the interchangeable ones with just one pen. Again, we can talk about it more on my least favorite things, but I had really bad luck with those. They would break. I was, I guess, apparently too rough on them. like pulling them out. Whenever you go to pull the nib out of the pen, like if you're not super careful, you can crack the tip or you can crack the pen. And I went through like 5 or 6 different pens before I was like, okay, this is really bad quality. I hate that I have to keep replacing this. And if I'm going to keep replacing the pen, I might as well just get the fixed tip. But this was also the time where we were looking at the Optima burner and getting more burners for classes. And I was like, I don't want to teach classes with this Kohlwood one. Like, students are going to break these. Like, this is just not built to last. And I know people have their opinions about burners and Kohlwood and razor tip and all of that, but there you'll find people who are like, oh, I love my Kohlwood. I've never had a problem. I've been using my Kohlwood for 25 years. I love Kohlwood. Like, that's great. That's totally great. Like, I love that you have had a good experience. But I have reached out to them. I got no response, no email, no contact us response back. Like, they would not give me the time, like the light of day. And I just found that so unprofessional and very rude and just not like, I'm trying to be a loyal customer to you and you're not anyway. So if you've had fine luck with your Kohlwood, that's awesome. That's great. And maybe I just got a bad batch multiple times. I don't know. But, you know, I'm burning at a normal heat. I'm doing normal things with my wood burner. Your pens should be able to hold up to the job. And they were like, well, if you're burning someone, it was a third party retailer that I had bought Kohlwood stuff from, is like Long Island Supply or something like that. I don't know, some third party I had bought Kohlwood stuff. And they had said, oh, well, if you're burning at like over an 8 for most of your burnings, then yeah, it's not going to stand up. And I'm like, then why is it built that way? Why do they sell it if it's not, like, your burner goes up to a 10. I should be able to use the tool the way it's used. Like, and I'm not burning at over an 8. You know, I burn at like a 6, 6.5 to a 7. Why are your materials not holding up? But anyway, so I love the fixed tip ones because I don't have to worry about breaking the things whenever I'm pulling them apart, or you have to like line up the pegs inside the nibs to line up to the holes inside the pen. And if you like, if you're really rough or if you're not paying attention, you know, you can break them, you can snap them. And I feel like I don't have to worry about that with the fixed tip. I feel like the con to the fixed tip is that if you break one, it's a $20 repair. You know, it's not a cheap $8 tip. You know, it's a whole new pen. It's $20-$25.
If you're lucky.
Yeah, if you're lucky.
You switch to the fixed tips also, right? For the most part.
Yeah. What about you, Zona?
I do like the interchangeables. Most of my tips are interchangeables, just so that I don't. That's what I started on first of all, and it's just like, I know my favorite tips though. My favorite tips, like my favorite tip is the spear or the knife point. And so I took the plunge and I got a fixed tip on those because I use them so much.
Yeah, sure.
But I still have, like, my nib crib is full of interchangeable tips. And I like that because, like, especially since I take my burner on site with me when I go to markets and I burn on site. Like, I don't, if I had fixed tip pens for all of my nibs, that I'm looking at like 30 pens at least. You know what I mean? Whereas I can bring three of my fixed tips and then one or two of my interchangeables, and then I have my nib crib and I've got about 40-50 nibs right there.
Nice.
You know what I mean? And it fits in like one. I have a Sterilite, not a Sterilite, a, what's it called?
Rubbermaid?
DeWalt container. Mm-hmm. That I, like, that's my razor tip bin that I take with me on markets. So everything fits in there.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, I love having the fixed tips on the ones that I use the most. Mm-hmm. But I like the flexibility to have the interchangeables.
Sure.
On the ones that I don't use the most.
Yeah.
And so. And you have a transformer that has three
carries three pens.
Carries, yes. Three pens, right?
So, oh, nice.
You don't have to worry about like because I think that's one of the problems that she had early on with the fixed tip, was that if she was going to swap out for one versus another, you have to wait for them to warm up.
I mean, the warm up is not so bad. It was more like when the first razor tip that I had was a dual, and it had two, and it was great. But it was like, if I was doing something that used, let's say, three different nibs, you know, at least I could hook them all up at once, and then I don't have to disconnect any to use it. You know, I can just hook all three of them up and then have them there.
Yeah.
So what are your favorite tips then?
Oh, it's so hard. Okay, I think my number one is the skew. So I pulled up the PJL Enterprises nib sheet here online, and it's his number one. It's the large skew. It's like a razor blade. And he says he has like recommended notes off to the side of what he recommends each nib be used for. And he says burning flatwork, gourds, bowl turners, bird carvers, mammal carvers, you know, like there's a lot you can do with it, but really it is just, it's so good for what I like. Like my style of line is a very deep, crisp line, and this gives me the best, crispiest lines of them all. I love it. Like, but it's not for everyone. So if you're like, oh my gosh, how can she like that nib? Like, it's okay. It's not for everyone, but it is my favorite. But there's another one. Let me see. I'm scrolling through his thingamajig here. I think it's the number 12 that I have, his small rounded skew. It says his note off to the side, like, it's for everybody. It's a very versatile pen tip. And it's true. It really is. But it's different in that it's rounded. So the tip of it is like, it's like a snoot. It's like a animal. It comes to a point and then it rounds under like a jowl or like the snoot of a dog or something.
It looks like a Bowie knife.
Oh, it looks like a Bowie knife. Okay. Yeah. I don't know what that looks like, but okay. But getting used to that rounded tip whenever you touch down, it's like a rounded razor blade. So it's different for sure. But I have found that I can do a lot of different things with that nib that I can't do nearly as well with the large skew.
I do love the rounded skew and the spear.
Yours are razor tip, right?
Yes, mine are razor tip. They also have a thicker skew, so it's a slightly thicker line. It's almost like a sharp burnishing tool. Burnishing.
Okay. Point.
Because the burnishing is like rounded. It's just a rounded wire.
Mm-hmm.
The one that gives me it has a slightly knife like edge.
Okay.
So it's slightly thicker.
Mm-hmm.
So I like that on. I found that I like that on some pieces also, because then I can. I just like the way that the knife points cut,
mm-hmm.
and they burn, and it's just a lot easier, and they don't skip across grain. They just cut right through it.
Yep.
That's why I like the knife point.
Yes, that's exactly why I love my skew. Right, it just slices through it.
Mm-hmm.
And then
you don't have the blob.
No,
you have to even out.
I know.
You have to figure out like, how do I hide that blob?
I know. That's like, I feel like that's a very common thing for beginners. It's like, I get blobby lines, help. And I mean, there are so many things. There are so many factors that go into why you're getting blobby lines. It could be your burner. It could be your nib. It could be the wood. It could be how hot you're burning. You know, like there are so many different factors. Mm-hmm. But I feel like the nib is a huge one that you can control right from the beginning. You have to have a nib that is meant to do the job. And when you're trying to get crisp lines, having a fat, rounded nib is not going to do the job. Like, it's just not. You're gonna sink into the grain lines. You're gonna get into the open grains. You're gonna, like, it's just not. it's like trying to cut a cake with a spoon. Like, it's just not going to do the job right. Like, yeah, you'll get a line, you'll get a slice of cake, but it's going to be all effed up. Get a knife. Get a cake slicer. You know?
Don't use a butter knife.
Right.
Don't use a butter knife.
You could use a butter knife.
To cut up a steak.
Right. It's like, you're going to shred it anyway. Mm-hmm. You just got to have the right tool for the job, and having the right nib from the beginning makes all the difference in the world. And then you can start kind of fidgeting with, okay, maybe it's the wood. If you're still getting blobby lines, maybe it's my technique. Maybe I need to burn faster, or turn the heat down, or, you know, whatever. There's so many things, but yeah, that's why I love that nib. She's a dream.
That's how I feel about my rounded.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you both color your pieces too, right?
We do.
Yes.
So what is your preferred way of coloring your pieces?
Zona, you go first.
I love watercolor. Mm-hmm. I found watercolor. I started off with acrylic, and that'll be in the next episode. And then I found watercolor, and I was just like, oh my God, watercolor. Because it's definitely it's a different look. It's a different, it's easier to work with, for me personally at least, it's a lot easier to work with. And then I found gouache, which is closer to acrylic than watercolors.
I love gouache.
And now I've been getting into watercolor pencils.
Ooh.
For the more watercolor look, but with more control. I find I have much better control with the watercolor pencils than I do with like tubes of watercolor.
I like to say the word gouache.
Gouache. It's a good one. It's a good word.
It's a really good word. What's your favorite medium, Renee?
I'm gonna have to go with watercolors, but specifically the handmade watercolors. That is my jam. So Zona, I know you know about the handmade watercolors, but for any of our listeners, handmade watercolors, it's like, oh, it's like
different.
They're built different. They're so good. They're so different. So basically, quick rundown, handmade watercolors, they are handmade by a person. They are not commercially produced. They are not made with filler. Like, there's a person actually mixing the formula for this handmade watercolor, and they are completely different than the commercial watercolors that you can get in stores and online, like at Walmart, Michael's, Hobby Lobby, whatever, wherever, like even professional ones like Daniel Smith. Those are professional watercolors, but they're just different than handmade watercolors. And they're not for everyone. Some people are like, meh, you know, handmade watercolors, like, eh. But I just love them. I love them. There are so many different makers of them now out there online. You can find a lot of handmade watercolor makers on Etsy. But a lot of people are also moving off of Etsy and making their own website. So a lot of the people that I have stuff from do have their own websites now. So I really love Yuli Watercolors. That is spelled I-U-I-L-E watercolors.com. Hers are phenomenal, and she has a huge variety. So I definitely recommend checking hers out. And then a couple of other brands that I really like. I love Emily Grace palettes.
Yeah.
Those are so good. I love Emily Grace's. And then Sparrow Scribbles, Stephanie over at Sparrow Scribbles. I love hers. And she has sparrowscribbles.com as well. And Emily Grace, I think, has emilygracepalettes.com. They're just different. They have like, oh, go ahead.
Do you like Art of Soil?
Okay. Yes, but I had a problem with them. So
I really like the way that it comes out. It gives this like really earthy,
yes,
like, you know,
it's yes, a look. It, right?
It is a look.
Like with any medium.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what I love about the handmade colors, the handmade watercolors, is like I have not seen. Like, I love the mica.
Yes,
and I love the color.
I love the glitter. I love, yes, like, oh my gosh. And
I have not seen that in any commercially made watercolor.
Right.
At all.
Right.
They're always handmade.
They're always the handmade ones.
And yes, I love the sparkle.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, the art of soil has its, it has a look. It has a look on wood. It's almost like chalk water.
Yeah.
Yeah, it has a
look. It has a look.
And it's not something that you would use for every single thing. Like, I can't imagine using it for, like, certain things.
Sure.
But if, but yeah.
Yeah, it has like its
my
place.
Elemental pieces.
Yeah.
It's perfect for elemental.
Yeah.
I would never think about using anything else but those for that particular piece.
Yeah.
But.
They're really cool. So the Art of Soil, she started off, I think, just her. But now she has this thriving business, and she makes all of her paints, all of her handmade watercolors, out of soil pigments. And she collects pigments from all over the United States, from her travels. She soil. Dehydrates the soils and the clays. I think her process, like, kind of, I don't know the right word, but it basically kills off any bacteria living in the dirt. So, like, you're not going to get moldy paint or whatever. But they're just fantastic, the colors that you can get from the earth. Mm-hmm. And they're so cool. The problem that I had, and this isn't necessarily the product, this is just my expectation. I had gotten her little, like, mini dot cards, but the dots didn't come on the card. The dots came in a little baggie. And then I just had to guess what colors they were and put them on the dot card myself. And it was the cheapest option on the website. And that's where I think I made my mistake. I want a little bit more put togetherness, but it was like the sustainable, like, EcoPod thing that she had. And they were a cheaper price. And, you know, all the little pods come in a bag, and then you can look at her reference picture online and, like, line them up to put on your dot card yourself. But some of them look so similar that I have no idea. I'm like, these two oranges look exactly the same. I don't know which one's carrot and which one's, you know, whatever. So, like, there was that.
As someone who's colorblind, I feel that.
Right, right. Like, but she had other ones where, you know, they do come already in place in the palettes and stuff, and they come with cards. And I think I would have much rather preferred that. But the paints themselves are pretty cool. I definitely recommend checking them out. Put it on your Christmas list or your Black Friday. Mm-hmm. Get a Black Friday coupon.
When last year, I think it was, I bought, what do you call that? A Muller?
Yeah, paint Muller.
Yeah, so I bought Zona a set, and it had, like, some pigments, and it had a muller, and it had the, what's the glass paint that you work on, the surface that you work on.
Yeah, I forgot. I don't remember what the actual technical term is, but it's basically a plane of glass.
Yeah.
So she started making her own watercolors. The first day, that muller went right through that glass.
Really? Oh, I didn't know that happened.
Oh, I was so mad at myself. I mean, it was a very expensive kit. It was like it was the beginner's kit.
Sure,
like, make your own.
Yeah,
watercolors, and I mean, it came complete with a muller, with the glass muller, and the plane of glass, and some pigments, and the binder, and some other stuff along with it. And I was trying to be really, really careful, and I was changing colors, so I was washing off the muller and the plate glass by the sink, and it was just a moment where the muller slipped off the counter right onto the glass in the sink, and I died and cried all at the same time, because it's like, well, one, because I like to take care of my stuff, and so I was, like, really upset about it because I wanted to make some more colors, and two, because I know it was expensive, and three, I mean, it was a gift, you know.
Yeah.
And I was just like, well, crap, now I can't, you know, keep playing. Like, I have to stop. So I ended up having to get another glass plate, but it was, like, really upsetting to me that I did that, because I broke one of my toys, and I don't like you know, breaking my toys.
Yeah.
She had another one in the mail in a matter of days.
I did.
I love that for you. Yes.
I did.
Now, what inspires you to make your pieces? What is your favorite thing to work on?
Your favorite subject matter.
Mm. There you go.
Renee, you go first.
Me go first? Okay. My favorite, I feel like this is so cliche, like I'm inspired by nature, but like, but really though I am, but it's like not just nature as a whole. It's like, I am inspired by how the golden ratio plays out in flower petals. I am inspired at the proportion of a very tiny native bee to a large coneflower. Like, it's like, can you imagine being a little ant? Like, the world is so, like, you have to climb so tall, like, so high. So, okras and peonies are oftentimes really pollinated heavily by ants. And so, like, if you are a little ant and you have to climb up the whole okra stalk to get to the flower on, like, that's your whole day right there. Like, can you imagine, like, putting myself in, I don't want to say nature's shoes, but like in just very specific perspectives, like, what is it like to be that ant up there and then to have to climb back down to the ground? Like, what is it like to be the bee lost in the sauce, absolutely loving life, up in the nectar and the pollen of whatever flower? Like, that bee is having the best day. Like,
bee butts.
I love pictures of fuzzy bee butts. I love them. They're so cute. But that's the kind of stuff that I think about. Like, what would it be like to be a bee? What is it like to be that little fly? What is it like to be the ant on the okra? And it's kind of like daydreamy and also kind of poetic in a way, but like that's really what inspires me, is to see things from a different point of view. And I think about them a lot, and like, I don't like killing things, so if I kill a bug, you know, I'm very sad about it. Like, the poor little ant didn't even have a chance. Oh my goodness.
I don't like, feel so bad when it's those nasty red ants that we get, man. Those guys are bastards.
Oh, don't even
like the fire ants?
Yeah.
Yeah, oh yeah. I hate the fire ants.
They can all burn. They can burn. I'm gonna
They do burn. Them on fire. Baking soda. If you ever get bit by them, baking soda will help take the sting out.
Oh, good to know. Mm-hmm. I was cleaning up the backyard and I didn't realize I must have stepped right into an anthill. And let's just say I've got, you can play connect the dots in my legs. Yeah. And it's very unpleasant. Ugh.
North Carolina red ants are a thing.
Ugh, that sounds terrible. I have a story. So in kindergarten, I fell into a huge fire ant hill at recess. And they were all over me immediately. And mind you, I'm like six, right? And I'm like crying on the playground, like crying for my teacher, like, Miss Adderley, like screaming. They were in my hair. They were burning. Like, they were all over. And they, I don't know, my parents had me young and they were in college. And I think maybe my mom was in class and they had to call my mom and have her come pick me up from class in the nurse's office because I had just been completely covered in ant bites all over my body. And I remember she gave me a baking soda bath. So it was a nice warm bath and you'd pour a crap ton of baking soda in it and you just kind of soak. And I remember that because I thought it was so weird, but it helped. It took the itch out. But it was traumatizing.
I will remember that for the next time.
It was
time.
Traumatizing. I have PTSD from kindergarten playground. But yeah, it's those fire ants. They'll F you up.
Roaches can go to hell too.
What's your muse?
Anyway, back to muses. Yeah, what's your muse, Ona?
I love symmetry. I love balance. So mandalas. I love mandalas. Mm-hmm. I can sit and create them and just draw them out. And then it's just like, oh, what am I going to put them on? Hint, hint, nudge, nudge. I have gotten into flowers, the realistic burns of the flowers. That's what I've been into a lot lately.
Flowers.
But for for the simple, like, palette cleansers, if you will, I like the line drawing, the simple line drawings, like creating my own coloring books. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what we do, right? We kind of create our own coloring books on wood and then color them in. Mm-hmm. So I do like that. I just like these simple doodles, you know. Sure. I like those. Those are my favorites.
Do you look to other things besides visuals for inspiration, like sounds or smells or any other senses, like, is it like music or anything else that kind of inspires you in what you do?
That is a great question. I'm very visual. So even if it's not the subject matter itself, it could be the essence of a place or the outlook at the top of a hike or the color of the water coming off of that waterfall. Like, it can be very specific things, but it's usually never sound. It's not smell. It's usually color. But music does inspire me in a way. Like, I am a big music girly, and I listen to quite literally everything from classical to soundtracks to rap to death metal. Like, I'm kind of all over the place. And there are times where I want to make art and I'm up late at night and I can listen to my music for hours and I'm kind of feeling the music. I kind of like go back to my angsty teenager days sometimes on some of my playlists and I'm like processing trauma or, you know, whatever from 15 years ago as I'm like working on this piece of like a coneflower or a bird or, you know, whatever. But a lot of the times the music that I'm listening to does not match my color media at all. One thing about me is I'm a huge metalhead and so many people are so surprised. They're like, you? Really? And I'm like, oh yeah, I'm a metalhead. The music that I listen to, like, your mother would be appalled. And it just doesn't match, like, the cute little goldfinch that I'm painting, you know? Like, you would never know that that's what I'm listening to. But sometimes the music. But yeah, I guess for other senses, it's really visual.
I mean, nothing inspires a tufted titmouse quite like Iron Maiden.
Honestly. I feel a lot and I'm a thinker, and because I'm a night owl, usually I do all my processing and my thinking at night when I'm alone and it's quiet. David's asleep, the dogs are asleep, the house is quiet, and I just have my own time, and whatever comes out of my heart during that time changes. Sometimes it's a big piece, sometimes it's mandalas that I'm working on Procreate, sometimes it's just doodling or coloring, you know, like, it's all sorts of different stuff. But yeah, what about you? Do you have anything else that, like, any input, sensory
my
input?
Emotions. Honestly, my emotions.
Emotions, yeah.
Like, if I'm not in a, if I'm in a good, happy mood, burning something with detail or something that requires concentration.
Sure.
Is easier for me. Like, if I'm in a bad mood, I just want to do, like, dark lines. Big dark lines and just burn at, like, 20.
Sure.
You know? So my emotions do play a role in what I'm doing. Like, how I feel about the piece itself.
Mm-hmm.
If I like it, I'm more apt to do it and finish it, and like I will obsess until I'm done with it.
Mm-hmm.
Versus if I hate it, I'm like dragging my feet for months because mm-hmm. I don't want to do it. I know I have to, but I don't want to, you know. So my emotions do play a role in it. when I'm working, I'm usually listening. Lately, I've been binging a particular podcast, so mm-hmm. which again is does not coincide with
what you're making.
No.
Yeah.
She's been binging My Favorite Murder.
Yes.
Yes, it's and I know it sounds bad just by the title, but it's actually there. I find them funny, and I find that they do talk about murder, and they make sarcastic remarks in forms of jokes. They're not making fun of the murder itself or the victims or the fact that it is a murder. They're making sarcastic remarks of maybe about the killer themselves or some other random thing.
They joke a lot about just the overall obsession with, like, so many people are just obsessed with serial killers, and they kind of like make light of that obsession mm-hmm. more than anything.
Yeah. But I have been, I've actually found they've talked about some other things. They talk a lot about mental health,
mm-hmm.
and they're very open about their mental health issues and their recovery, because they're both recovering. One is from alcohol and one is from narcotics. So they're very open about that, and they talk a lot about that, and they talk about life, not just the murder, but even when they do talk about the murder, some of the things are like really interesting. But I mean, I have a morbid curiosity about a lot of things. Like, this is why I'm that typical woman that will sit there and watch NCIS. I will binge the whole damn series, all of them, because I love them, and all those true crime shows. Like, I am a true crime fan. I love it. It's just fascinating to me. It's also the science behind it that really fascinates me. But yeah, so I'll be listening to my MFM and burning pride kitties.
Right. Rainbow, you know, cats. I mean? Yeah.
Like,
all
right,
we're
they
gonna
don't match.
We're gonna detour away from Megadeth and My Favorite Murder.
Okay, all right.
And
we're gonna reel it back in.
Yeah, we're gonna reel it back in. Favorite show, market.
I think my favorite show that we've done is the Port Warwick Sculpture and Fine Art Festival or show. I don't remember the exact title, but it's the one that we did last fall. That one was really good. And I think it was my favorite because it was one of the first times that people bought some of my big priced pieces without even blinking. And it was so validating. We didn't make a ton of money from that show, so it's not like it was our biggest money maker or anything like that. Like, it was all right, but I was so proud of the fact that my $500 piece sold to a guy who didn't even blink at the price. And I was like, are you sure? Like, that doesn't say 50, mm-hmm. that says 500, you know? And he was like, yeah. And like, that was just amazing. And then there was this other lady who bought this one piece that I had for a while, and then she came back the next day and bought another $350 piece, and I was just nice. Blown away, and I felt the love. So it was really reaffirming and kind of like put my imposter syndrome at bay for a while, because I'm like, okay, like, I feel like an actual artist with art that mm-hmm. people actually want, you know? So I think that was my favorite show that we've done.
Oh, I feel that.
What about you?
I feel that so much.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite is Charlotte Pride. I love Pride to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
I'm part of that community, and I'm proud to be it. I mean, I don't need to shove it in people's faces, because that's not the point. You know what I mean? But
mm-hmm.
I also feel a connection to it because I've known a lot of people who are in it. Who are in the community,
yeah.
You know, and I feel for their struggles. But Pride itself is just so boisterous and so much fun, and it's loud and it's proud, and it's just a fun thing for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, I used to go in New York all the time, and then I stopped. And when I found out about Charlotte Pride down here, I was just like, oh, hell yeah.
and I can be a vendor? Hell yeah. Yeah. And it was just, I mean, the first one we did really well. And I was like really like dumbfounded. And like you, it was just like, wait, they like me.
They really like me. Like me. Exactly.
Know, and like, what? And it was definitely absolutely reaffirming. And then, I mean, last year we did it and we split the tent with the other couple that we collaborate with and did amazing.
Mm-hmm.
We did amazing and we're doing it again this year. And it's just, it's the atmosphere. It's the ambiance. It's the aura.
Sure.
I just love it.
It's like the like-mindedness of everyone coming together.
Yes. It's that. It's, you know, I can let my freak flag fly.
Yeah.
I don't have to like furl it up into a little corner and stick it, mm-hmm. you know, in a little corner. I could just let it do its thing. And it's just like, yes.
I love that.
I have a story about Pride.
Oh, which one?
So the first year that we did Pride, we were taking the boys with us, their two sons, and they both would, in the, you know, when we were starting out, they used to help a lot more. Now they both have jobs, so they're usually not available on the weekends, but at the time they used to come and help us set up, break down. But then during the day, sometimes they'd help us sell things, but for the most part they'd kind of like, you know, go do their own thing. Matthew and CJ came with us to Pride.
Oh my God.
And after we had finished setting up, they were helping us sell things, you know, we told them, okay, you know, go do your own thing, go check out a booth, you know, there's different stuff to do. I'm sitting there trying to make a sale and Matthew walks up behind me and goes, "Hey, Dad, I got syphilis." I said, "What?"
Oh, no. Buddy.
There was some kind of a, like, an STD,
spinny wheel win a prize thing.
Okay.
Yeah. Like the wheel of STDs or something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
It was like, you know, it was supposed to be like an educational thing.
Sure.
And it was just like, I was like, Matthew, just not while I'm trying to make a sound.
It's just like, dude, you can't walk,
you can't say that in public.
Say that. Like, I mean, and he was, what, he was like 15? No.
He was probably about 14.
He was about 14. And like, this guy, and this kid walks up and he says, "I've got syphilis." Like, what are you thinking as the adult? Like, the hell is going on?
What is
in that
happening?
House? Exactly. Like, what? CPS. You know, it was
like, I think y'all need to have a conversation. I'll be back to buy this later.
Maybe. You know?
make sure you clean it off first.
Do you have hand sanitizer?
Okay. So let's wrap it up
with
your favorite piece of art that you've done and your favorite custom order.
My favorite piece. Okay, so this is really hard, and I've been thinking about this question because I just don't have a solid favorite piece. I have favorite pieces, but one that I'm really, really proud of, maybe the most proud of, is my indigo bunting piece. We went on a hike last summer, and it was to a new Pennsylvania state park. And I saw indigo buntings for the first time. They've been on my bird bingo because I'm a birder. David and I are birders. We love birds. And we carry around the binoculars. We go on hikes specifically to try to find specific birds. And an indigo bunting had been on my list. And I hadn't seen one in the wild. Like, I see them in the books. They look so pretty. Where are they? And on this hike, we saw one. And we saw the male and the female. They were both there in the field. And it was just like a magical moment. And I knew I had to do something with these birds. So I came home and I put together this piece. And I burned it and painted it. And it's like a $550 piece. Like, it is a very big one. It's very special. A lot went into it. And I just absolutely love it. Like, if it doesn't sell, that's okay. Because I love it.
That's oh no, it was the goldfinch. It was your finch that sold.
The finch, yeah. I did a goldfinch in my garden with all the different cone flowers and lavender and stuff. That one sold. Indigo bunting has not sold, but that's okay because I love him. And then favorite custom order. Honestly, I've been thinking about this too. I don't think I have a favorite custom order. I have not had a lot of custom orders where people just let me do my own thing. When people ask me, hey, can you do this or can you do that? They already have something in mind and they want to see it executed a specific way. I have yet to get a custom order where it is just pure creative freedom. And that's what I really love the most. But I haven't gotten any of those orders. I've gotten Bible verse orders. I've gotten some quotes. I've gotten, like, someone wanted a bird one time. Like, you know, it's me trying to make something come to life that someone already has pictured in their mind. And those, like, they're okay, but they're not, they're just not my favorite. So I don't think I have a favorite custom order, unfortunately.
How about you, Z?
My favorite piece is Felicity's box.
Yes.
Let me, if I can interject here. Mm-hmm. So Felicity's box, because people are not going to know what Felicity's box is, we did lose a child. We had a missed miscarriage. Unfortunately, you know, we had actually wanted to make a memory box for Felicity, which was, you know, the name that we selected for her. And we were going to buy a box from you, actually.
Yeah.
We had ordered a custom box with a lid and a latch, and we were going to use that to keep the baby book and all of the memorabilia from the pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
And when we had the missed miscarriage, we decided to repurpose that box, which is a beautiful piece of wood. And I know that, David, I know that a lot of work went into that piece, and it is a gorgeous piece of wood. And we'll,
a lot of love went into it.
Yes. We will post pictures of that on the Discord for people to see.
Mm-hmm.
But
I have plans.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And plans. But that box is now going to serve as a memory box for you know, for her, and to help kind of keep her memory alive.
Sure.
So
it has absolutely helped with my grieving process.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure.
But you know, this box is absolute 100% handmade, you know, straight from David's hands, from your minds. You know, the box was was just part of the creation. Like, the burns on it, I created myself, and I spent a lot of time coming up with the exact burns, because it's kind of like this was a custom order for myself.
Mm-hmm.
It was an absolute custom order for myself. And it was like, I'm not skimping this time.
Yeah.
So yeah, the burn itself, and I've decided to color it. So I started actually,
did you? I was gonna ask.
I started coloring the flowers today, and I was working on that, and I will show it to you once we're off air.
Okay.
But that is, I think Felicity's box is my favorite burn. Yeah, I think that's my favorite piece. I mean, like you, I have favorite pieces. Like, I can think of at least two or three other ones that I love also.
Mm-hmm.
But I think this is my, and it's absolutely because it's personal to me, but it's definitely my favorite.
And your favorite custom order?
My favorite custom order was a set of checkers that I made for a woman who was gifting it to her friend. Her friend's son had created a board from hand, a checkerboard. He made the checkerboard out of from hand and was going to make the pieces. And his goal was to make a set for people, for everyone in the family, for every family in his family. Unfortunately, he passed away. So it was just the board. And so they wanted pieces for it. So I worked with the customer to create these. They were very simple, but it wasn't about the simplicity. It was about the sentiment, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
Those are the pieces that I love the most. You know, where I hear from them afterwards, they're like, well, we gave the piece to the recipient. And they started crying because it meant so much. Like, those are my favorite custom orders. Not because I'm making someone cry, but because the sentiment behind the tears.
Yeah.
You know? But the checkers were definitely... That was my first one that, like, really... Really... Touched.
Yeah.
David, do you have a... favorite piece that you've done in terms of any of the wood pieces that you've made?
Probably Felicity's box is my favorite piece that I've made. Because I felt like it was... I don't get to do a lot of, like, art woodworking. Most of what I do is production level woodworking, so it's like I need to make 30 cutting boards as quickly as possible. So when I get to do art stuff, it feels more special. So I love the special boxes that I get to make. Before that box, a close second was I made a special box to hold like my family's heirloom cribbage board that has been like... Literally, it was in the room as I was being born because they were, like, passing the time while my mom was in labor because she was in labor for a long time. So, like...
It is the family's cribbage board.
Yeah.
They play a lot of cribbage.
And, like, it had, like, this... It came in the original packaging, right? So a cardboard box and, like, was held together with, like, tape and rubber bands. And I was like, we can do better than this.
And that was
cribbage?
Her Christmas present.
Yeah.
It was a beautiful box.
Cribbage is a thing, pretty. Though. We were at one of the woodworking stores, and they have, like, you can get, like, stencils
mm-hmm.
for
mm-hmm.
cribbage boards that you, you know, so that you can drill them in at the appropriate, you know, distances. And I had no idea. I'm like, we should make cribbage boards. You should burn cribbage boards.
We made a cribbage board for somebody. It was a custom order that somebody had wanted, and Renee drilled all the holes.
I made a template.
Yeah. I made a template in Procreate. Well, I had looked up, like, cribbage boards to see, because it's, like, sets of five peg holes and then a line and then, you know, whatever. So I had to, like, mm-hmm. space them out, and then I did it in Procreate and then transferred it by hand onto the wood, and then I drilled every single hole on the drill press. Oh, man. That took a while.
Did you hate holes after that? You must have hated having to drill after that.
It was okay. My wrist was really sore, but it was very satisfying because we were like able to set the bit on the drill press to a certain like depth, so I didn't really have to mm-hmm. think about it. I just had to pull the lever and scoot the wood for each one, and it was just very like it's almost like I don't know, it's like
it's zen.
Picking. Like it's zen, mm. right? Like it's like mm. very satisfying.
None of what you just said went into the microphone.
Oh, it's okay. Not what I said. It's just it's very therapeutic, and so it was like vzzt.
So, was there anything else that you wanted to cover in terms of favorite things?
I think just for prosperity of our this particular episode, favorite finishes, because I know that that's another mm-hmm. thing that a lot of people will ask about. I personally like the Minwax polycrylic. I spray over my painted stuff and let that dry, and then I generally use a brush on to seal the entire piece, but I always spray first to basically set the paint.
Mm-hmm.
And because I use watercolor and it's a water-based paint.
You don't want to smudge it.
Sealer. You don't want to smudge it because that is just like, why? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've done that and I've hated all of my life choices after that. And cry because I completely screwed up a piece.
Yep.
What about you?
I am really hooked on this Minwax Helmsman Spar Urethane Spray. That has been my go-to for the past, I don't know, 6 months. Before that, I was really, really big on this Varathane. It was a Rust-Oleum Varathane spray. But after I got a few faulty cans, I was like, absolutely not. Like, it was, I got a few cans and it totally screwed up my burn. It screwed up the wood. It was coming out all foamy. Like, it just wasn't, something changed. I don't know if I just got like bad cans from the warehouse or they changed their formula or, you know, whatever. But it was not the same. And I was like, this sucks. I have to find something else. So I found this Minwax Helmsman spray. And I love the gloss. I don't use the satin. I use the semi-gloss. And it is just like, it's so good. It's a little finicky, but I really like it. It's definitely my recommended right now. If anyone wants a new finish, go get that one.
And I mean, they're not cheap, right?
So, no.
You know, you wanna, yeah. You know, you don't want a faulty can is
right.
That's
I was like,
you've got to build that into your price,
right? Yeah,
it's so aggravating.
It is so aggravating. But I haven't had any problems with the Helmsman, the Spar Urethane. And if I have to choose just like a generic kind of finish, spray-ons are my favorites. I do not like the brush-ons. Because I have ruined so many pieces by using like a water-based brush on with watercolors or a water-based media, and then I smudge it. I haven't done that in a while because like I've learned, but at the beginning when you're first trying things and starting out and you're just like
your first learning,
you're going to screw up a lot of art that way. So I just don't even want to touch the piece of wood. I just use the spray and leave it at that because that's the safest bet for me. Yeah.
Well, this was really awesome. I think, you know, we covered a lot. And thanks, everybody.
We're going to have to do a part two at some point, I think. Because there's a whole bunch
of things. We still have a lot of other favorite things we could talk about.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think if you want to hear more about our favorite things, then let us know in Discord. Let us know on Instagram. Follow us on Instagram. It's David and Renee, BZ Furfur, and Pyro Toasty Talks. Go to the website, pyrotoastytalks.com, and subscribe on Spotify, subscribe on Apple Podcasts. And, you know, we'll be back in 2 weeks where we're going to be talking about maybe some things that
the opposite end.
Yeah, are not as fond of.
Yes.
Our least favorites. Bottom of the barrel.
Bottom of the barrel. And with that, stay toasty.
Stay toasty, everyone.